Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome everyone to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it's tax time. Today's the tax deadline. I assume your taxes are done. Mine are. Hopefully people are done or about to be done or have filed for an extension. We learned late last week what the president paid in taxes. Turns out he's not paying 30%, so he's not a patriotic American by his own definition. Joe Biden, very charitable as it turns out. 1.5% of his income went to charity. Mitt Romney, though, filing for an extension. And so, among other reasons, that is being used by the Obama administration to point out that Mitt Romney is being secretive. He has something to hide, Jim, from the American people. They, in fact, want his tax returns not just released for this year, but all the way back to the 1970s, because something might be in there that he has to hide. So the RNC finding it a bit odd that it's the Obama administration that has a problem with people being open and honest in the public. And they offer this little collage of quotes from Obama administration officials or companies certainly sympathetic to the Obama administration who have been testifying before Congress on issues ranging from Solyndra to MF Global, Fast and Furious, and now the GSA.
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
I respectfully decline to answer based on my constitutional right.
Federal prosecutor Patrick Cunningham is going to plead the Fifth.
What is your title at GSA?
Mr. Chairman, on the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my Fifth Amendment constitutional privilege.
Noticing a pattern there, Jim?
I am noticing it. It's no surprise that the video was entitled Obama's Favorite Amendment, because we know his favorite amendment is not the Second Amendment. And considering the lack of access the press has, you might argue the First Amendment is not his favorite either. Interesting that you take the Wayback Machine to 2008, and folks like me were pointing out that Obama was not releasing any of the paperwork related to his work with William Ayers on that commission to improve Chicago schools that had got very few results. The state legislative office records were thrown out. He refused to release a specific list of his law clients. The only thing he released was to give a release of all the firm's clients, which was, several hundred each year. So we really don't know much about the cases he litigated. Didn't release his application to the state bar, where a lot of people wondered if he may have lied about parking tickets and past drug use, legal or billing records to verify that he only did a few hours of work for Resco's nonprofit, and of course, medical records. And college transcripts, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we were told back in 2008 this didn't really matter, that if you wanted to know about Obama's life story, read his book, and that's all you needed to know. You did not need any documents to verify it. Here we are 4 years later, Obama's the incumbent, and now all of these things are the most important things to have disclosed to the entire world, except, of course, for all these cases in which, members of the administration and staffers have been called to testify before Congress, and suddenly whatever they have to say is, protected by their Fifth Amendment rights. I mean, in the mind of the Obama campaign, we should be much more worried about about Mitt Romney's tax returns from the 1970s than, say, Fast and Furious or the GSA spending bonanza or things like that.
Not exactly the best transparency defense for 2012. It was going to be a very difficult one anyway. As you pointed out in the Jolt, he won an award for transparency, and the ceremony in which he accepted the award was not open to the press. So that tells you about all you need to know. But the president is focusing on really important things, Jim, and coming up with brand new and innovative ideas to help lower our gas prices. The president, once again, deciding to assign his administration to the task of really trying to root out energy speculators who are artificially driving up the gas prices because, of course, those prices have nothing to do with the cratering dollar, which is largely the result of our debt, or the fact that he's doing almost nothing to pursue traditional energy sources. So it's a good thing, Jim, that he's got, whether it's the Department of Energy, Department of Justice, whoever he's got on this, I'm sure they'll get right to the bottom of it.
Well, besides the two, departments you mentioned, he's had the Federal Trade Commission looking at this. Under the financial overhaul legislation, they're supposed to have authority to look over this. As I mentioned, this is a spring tradition for the Obama administration. It has happened in spring of 2009, 2010, 2011, and now here we are, 2012, the exact same thing. The idea that high prices at the pump are some sort of shadowy forces, the kind of villains you'd find in a John Grisham novel who, you know, have hitmen as well or something are behind the high, you know, gas price. Instead of insufficient development of domestic resources and instead of, you know, increased demand and et cetera, et cetera. No. It's not that we're not putting enough permits in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not that we're not drilling in Anwar. It's not that we're not drilling off our coast. It's not that the permitting process for federal lands has slowed to a crawl. No. It's all those shadowy forces. Every once in a while, Greg, I mean, this is a bad martini in the sense that it's just kind of frustrating to have a president who just goes, you know, plays these games year in, year out. It'll be a worse martini if the American people buy into it and think this really amounts to anything. As I put earlier today, there are one of two options. Either every previous effort to rein in these nefarious, sinister, manipulative oil market traders, every preceding one has failed, or they're not really the problem. And I will let the administration choose from either of those two. My inclination is number two, that really oil traders are not really a big reason for the high gas prices. We will see if the American people think that this is, you know, this counts as serious action on the part of the administration. I don't think it will be, but, you know, in times like this, people look for scapegoats and maybe they'll buy into the, you know, shadowy conspiracy theories.
Possibly. I like your Grisham analogy there, and I'm pretty sure there's no Wilford Brimley getting ready to kneecap anybody who's looking.
The most kindly and avuncular, you know, mafia hitman we've ever seen, you know. I believe his old saying was, you know, either work with us or we'll have you sleep with the Quaker Oats or whatever it was. Our grand conspiracy is the wrong thing to do and a tasty way to do it. So my award-winning Wilford Brimley impression, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely. Spot on. So on to martini number three now. And as we know, Jim, a lot of class coming from the liberal side. All you have to do is stream through Twitter every day, go to Michelle Malkin's site, and she chronicles the just ridiculous level of vitriol coming from the left. We certainly saw it from a lot of different entities, Bill Maher included, when it came to Sarah Palin. We saw it a little bit with respect to the Ann Romney Hillary Rosen controversy. There's just a lot of hate on the left. And the latest incarnation of this came from Bob Beckel. He's a regular on The Five on the Fox News Channel. This particular quote comes from the Great American Panel on the Hannity program. There is a bleep in here that was not there when it was actually airing last night.
You say that Head Start is a failure. You don't know what the you're talking about.
Whoa, bleep. What are you doing?
Failure.
I just can't stand right wingers just their mouths running all the time.
Jeopardy walls that comes up.
We apologize.
I don't apologize.
Yes, you do.
No,
you just cursed on the air.
I'm not going to apologize.
It later became somewhat clear in there that Beckel didn't realize he was on the air. But let me offer a couple of small pieces of advice as someone who is in studio every day. Number one, the less you include those words in your vocabulary, the less likely they are to be on the air. Number two, if you are in studio, always assume everything you say will be on the air and you will not get into a lot of trouble. Jim, in the larger perspective of the 2012 campaign, this probably won't be a huge issue, but it certainly continues a narrative for the left that has become more recognized in the last few days and weeks.
Greg, what the fiddlesticks are you talking about? You know, we are familiar with the body of work of Bob Beckel and this flippin' flapping fellow. A couple interesting thoughts. First of all, I find Bob Beckel to be this fascinating character because he is the designated lefty talking head on a couple programs like The Five. And you know, it's the Great American Panel. And I say this as a great American who's been on a few times. The panel always consists of one token Democrat for Hannity to beat up on, one very attractive woman, and one other guy. And I've always seemed to be the other guy. And I never quite know whether since I'm not the attractive woman and I'm not the token liberal, I never quite know whether my job is to hold down the token liberal while Hannity punches him rhetorically, I mean. But anyway, so perhaps Beckel had snapped. And look, we have all had some moments where we're arguing with someone and we want to say, to paraphrase, you don't know what the heck you're talking about. Unfortunately, it appears that Mr. Beckel was at the end of his rope and decided to let it all out. And what's worse, what's kind of fascinating is that, as I said, having been on this, occasionally you'll have a little bit of, you know, chuckling off, you know, while the camera's off. Usually they do two segments of the Great American Panel. But usually at some point they'll go, all right, 5, 4, 3, 2, you know, quiet. And then, you know, and then Hannity will introduce. And you know, it appears Beckel was just completely oblivious to this. Later in that segment, he gives Hannity grief for not telling him they were on the air.
Right.
You know, it's good to see Mr. Beckel brought his A game last night It's one thing to use the bad words. It's another thing for, like, 1 minute later, while you're on the air, to be insisting that you're not on the air, which I thought was almost the funnier one. Because you're actually, like, you know, he's like, no, we're not on the air. Look, basic general rule of life. If the host of a program says you're on the air, don't argue with him. Chances are he knows. An ignoble moment for Bob Beckel. I find this to be one that's almost forgivable. We all have our moments where we want to lose our temper. Unfortunate for him that he had it on camera, and I'm glad he apologized, and I hope he is slightly more careful in the future. But look, this is the Archie Bunker of Fox News. This guy kind of comes on and, you know, always kind of looks like he's just he just can't believe he's there. Why is everyone bothering him? He just wants to turn back, you know, tune into Sports Center or something. So, so hopefully Beckel will just have slightly better judgment in the future, and he won't make this kind of looping mistake ever again.
Yeah, don't be shocked if you see Juan Williams or someone else in the five chair for the next few days, maybe the rest of the week. I don't know how this will work out. It's not the first time he's actually done that, but it's certainly the most prominent way that he's done it. Jim, you and I minding our P's and Q's here on the air today, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.